Today on Straight Talk Africa, Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga took a controversial oath as the People's President of the Republic of Kenya. Miguna Miguna, lawyer and activist who presided over Odinga's ceremony, was deported to Canada following 5 days in police custody. His lawyers and supporters say his constitutional rights have been violated and are calling for his immediate return to his motherland. Citizen Television, one of three media outlets shut down for a week by the government, remains off the air. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all of our viewers and listeners. I'm Hayley Adams-Fitzpatrick, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on the latest political developments in Kenya.
Coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
The political upheaval continues in Kenya. The government says opposition activist and politician Miguna Miguna was expelled from the country Tuesday for being a prohibited immigrant. My colleague Paul Sisko has more.
In the latest political twist, opposition member Miguna Miguna is in Canada after first stopping in Amsterdam, where he told reporters his forced deportation, his words, not the government's, is a flagrant violation of his constitutional rights. Miguna was arrested last Friday in a dawn raid on his home. He was granted bail of 50,000 Kenyan shillings, about 500 U.S. dollars. But he remained in police custody with his whereabouts unknown until he appeared in court Tuesday to hear the charges. Miguna was charged with being present and consenting to the administration of an oath to commit a capital offense, namely treason. Privately owned Citizen Television reported that Miguna refused to enter a plea, saying his case should be heard in a court in Nairobi. Instead, he was put on a KLM flight by Kenyan authorities bound for Amsterdam. The chain of events leading to Miguna's expulsion began with the so-called People's Inauguration on January 30th.
Assume the office of the People's President.
Three media outlets were closed by government communications authorities for attempting to cover the event. Two of three Kenyan television stations shuttered by the government over their coverage of the political opposition resumed partial broadcasting Monday. NTV resumed broadcasting on its pay-to-view channels, but its free-to-air channel was still off. KTN News has also resumed its free-to-air channel, but independently owned Citizen TV, which was also shut down last week, remains off the air. The Kenyan High Court suspended the government's directive shutting down the stations. The United States, the United Nations, and African Union quickly condemned the closing of the media outlets in Kenya. Kenya's attorney general had warned that any attempts to swear in Odinga would qualify as treason, which is punishable by death. According to Kenyan legal statutes, any person who is present at and consents to the administering of any oath or takes any such oath or engagement not being compelled to do so is guilty of a felony and is liable to imprisonment for life. The African Union and its current chairperson of the commission, former South African President Thabo Mbeki, raised further concerns about the opposition leaders swearing in. Several opposition NASA party leaders did not attend the event, later explaining it was a political tactic, not an indication of any split in the party. Now Kenyans and supporters of Raila Odinga are anxiously awaiting his next move. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. For an update on the political situation in Kenya, I am joined live via Skype from the capital, Nairobi, by VOA East Africa correspondent Daniel Shea. Good evening, Daniel.
Good evening.
How are you?
Doing well.
What is the mood like downtown Nairobi?
Well, there's certainly a lot of political tension in the air here. We did have a very rare statement issued by the Chief Justice today, basically saying, warning that the Constitution was being violated, that the rule of law is under threat because authorities here have been ignoring court orders and basically going after some of these opposition leaders and refusing to appear in court when they're ordered to, and refusing to release those who were detained when they've been ordered to. So certainly a lot of tension in the air, but the weather, as always, is nice in Nairobi.
Now, talking about the statement by the Chief Justice, David Maraga, has the government or the executive branch, has it reacted so far?
Well, we haven't seen any specific reaction to his statement come out yet. But certainly they must have to respond at some point because it is such a strongly worded statement. And it does indicate a real standoff between the High Court and the government authorities here in Kenya.
To what extent are court orders optional, or are they in fact mandatory when they are issued?
Well, certainly there is an appeals process if there is a disagreement with the orders as they come down, but they cannot be ignored. If they wish to appeal, they can put in the proper paperwork and they can make those motions. But that wasn't done in a few of the cases that have been occurring in the last week or so here in Nairobi. Instead, they were simply being ignored. People were being held without any real legal reason to be able to hold them, according to the High Court. So there was a lot of political goings on, obviously, with the ignoring of the High Court orders.
Now, talking about the High Court orders, talk to us about specifically Miguna Miguna. A man apparently who had actually been released by a judge in Nairobi, but he ends in fact on a KLM aircraft deported to Kenya via Amsterdam. What happened exactly?
Yeah, this was quite striking. So it was last night essentially that instead of being turned over to the authorities in Nairobi, appearing before a high court as was ordered, he was put on a plane and deported. And essentially what the authorities here have said is that he was not a Kenyan citizen. They're claiming that he was not a Kenyan citizen because he was a citizen of Canada. And during the time when he applied for a Kenyan passport, according to a government statement that came out today, dual citizenship was not legal, and he did not denounce his Canadian citizenship. And the process by which he was granted his passport, according to this government statement, was not fully within the law. So essentially what they were saying is he was never was a Kenyan citizen, according to the law, because he had not given up his Canadian citizenship. Of course, he's said from Amsterdam that he is going to fight that this is not true, that he never covered up the fact that he was a dual citizen, that he was, and he never gave up his Kenyan citizenship. So certainly the way in which he was quickly sent out of the country when there is this standoff going on with the High Court, and the way that his arrest was handled and his detention has raised a lot of eyebrows here amongst the political analysts and those who are watching Kenyan politics and the goings-on very carefully.
Now, Daniel, wait a minute. This is a man who had actually been cleared by the IEBC to run for the governor of the Nairobi County. How did that happen?
Well, certainly there's very much a clear split happening here in Kenya in terms of politics, and there are sides being taken. There are moves being made that are not clearly within the way they should be handled by legal means. And there's exaggeration, and there are manipulations. And it's unfortunate that we're not seeing this going through the court process, being handled, as to be. And that's why I think we've seen this very rare statement today by the Chief Justice expressing very deep concerns about what's going on in the country.
How do you respond to some who are saying, what did the authorities know about Miguna Miguna's immigration status, and when did they know it?
Well, this is also in question. Some of the documents that were released, the charge made against him, which amounted to treason, although, of course, they didn't actually go to court, but the charges when he was detained, the court case did not occur because of his deportation. But on the charge sheets, there are some indications that that he was recognized as a citizen of Kenya. So there are some contradictions in what the authorities are saying in regards to him, whether they recognize him or don't recognize him as a citizen of Kenya.
A man, of course, who happens to have been born in Kisumu. What are his supporters or his lawyers on the ground? How are they reacting?
Well, certainly they're upset. I mean, there was welcoming of the Chief Justice, his statement today, and they're hoping, of course, that this will lead to some sort of action against those who were not following the procedures as they should have occurred and were detaining him. And of course, there's going to be further court cases as a result of the deportation. There were also, of course, street actions and protests that took place. Unfortunately, in the last couple of days, there have been a couple of people who did lose their lives in some of those scuffles that took place when bullets were fired in the air by, in one case, by the police to try and disperse protesters. So certainly there is a lot of tension and there is a lot of worry that if there isn't some legal decisions made to try and bring about justice in these cases, that things could heat up perhaps even further.
Now, Daniel, I know that you are an acting East African correspondent, but actually you've actually been a correspondent in Moscow. When you look at the kind of story that you are covering right now, can you give us a sense as to how you could, for example, compare and contrast that kind of story in Moscow?
Well, certainly there is an opposition in Russia, and they are struggling against the powers in Russia. But I would say that I guess the real key difference between covering these two kinds of stories in terms of the those in power and those in opposition are that here in Kenya, there is a much larger following among the opposition, and the controversial election that took place last year, the annulment and then the rerun. It was a very tight race here in Kenya, whereas in Russia, they have an election coming up, a presidential election in just a month's time. And there's very little doubt who's going to win that election. There's almost no airtime given to the opposition, and they're not able to get their message out because the state media is so powerful in Russia. Where here in Kenya, you do have some independent stations. Unfortunately, they were shut down, as we saw. And if you look just behind me, you'll see the television behind me it's actually tuned to Citizen TV right now. It's not turned off, but there is no signal still. So although we did see partial broadcast resumed to the two other stations, Citizen TV, still off the air. And we should say also note that Voice of America actually has programming on Citizen TV that people here in Kenya are not able to watch right now, as that still plays out.
Well, thank you very much, Daniel, for that update.
My pleasure.
Now joining us here today are three distinguished guests. Anita Reagan, International Energy Consultant, Dr. Ken Opalo, Welsh School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University, and Dr. Kenneth Mwenda, Professor of Law at the University of Pretoria, South Africa, He's also a Rhodes Scholar, or former Rhodes Scholar, in fact, from Oxford University. I have to say, Anita, of course, Ken and Kenneth, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
Later in the program, we'll give you, our audience, a chance to call in with your question and comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately. Anita, you just got back from Nairobi a couple of days ago.
Yes, I did.
How was Nairobi like?
As Daniel said, the weather was good. We come back to the cold of D.C. But as he said, there's a lot of political tension which is currently going on. But these are issues that can be resolved once we understand what direction we need to go to.
When you talk about tension, what exactly do you mean? Are you talking about a tension perhaps that could actually be cut with a knife or a bayonet?
Not really. Can't think that it is that kind of tension that cannot be resolved. It's just understanding as to where we are as a country or as a people and what it is that we also want our government to do. Even as a citizen, you also have to know the responsibility as a citizen within a given infrastructure or country. So it's just a matter of everybody understanding what role that they need to play.
Now, you are a member of the Kenyan diaspora, correct?
That's correct.
You just heard or seen what has happened to Miguna Miguna.
Yeah, absolutely.
A member of the Kenyan diaspora,
mm-hmm.
a man born in Kisumu.
Yes.
Are you concerned about the move against him?
Well, I am concerned. I don't really know the details since I've come back, so I need to find out exactly what has happened. But in the case of his Canadian citizenship and the fact that he's actually a Kenyan since he's born in Kenya, there is a process that you have to go through with the immigration, and you have to submit certain papers, in other words, to be a dual citizenship. So whether he went through all that process, I do not know. So these are some of the things that need to be looked into before you can say this is right or wrong. But as I know as a fact that when you do have dual citizenship, that you have to go through an immigration process to ensure that your papers are both Kenyan and from other countries that you may be from.
Anita, this is not a person that really is not known.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is an individual, for example, who ran into this issue back in 2012.
That's right.
And has even written a book to boot and talks about it.
Exactly.
Is it possible, for example, that the IEBC could possibly have actually cleared him to run for the governorship of Nairobi County without actually looking at the facts?
Well, most likely they must have had some information about him, a national ID, his birth certificate. So there are ways of proving that the person is actually a Kenyan citizen based on the system that they have in place. But on the issue of the Canadian citizenship, now that's another story that it requires immigration process to go through.
But I thought the last time I checked, the Kenyan Constitution of 2010 allows for dual nationality.
No, it does, but there is a process you need to go through, and that it go you have to go through that process through immigration.
I see.
Yes, so that needs to be done.
What about you, Ken? Your reaction to what's happening in your homeland? You also actually just got back from there.
Yes, I was in Kenya in December.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, you know, I first of all, I agree with the comments that the problems that Kenya has right now are not intractable. These are problems that can be solved.
They're not insurmountable.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there's actually a school of thought that seems to suggest that, you know, between the annulment of the election in September of last year through the second rerun, Kenyan elites have been trying, been stress-testing the constitution. And, you know, because if you look at what happened between the first election and Kenyatta's inauguration, everything was according to the law, right? Odinga's challenges were according to the law. The reactions from the president, the incumbent president Kenyatta, were according to the law.
What are you talking about according to law? Yes, of course, the president, his initial reaction obviously seemed to be that of a statesman,
But he also later quickly added that these are our Quora. The judges are thugs.
Yes. And everyone pushed against that. So, that was not in good form as someone who purports to, have an allegiance to the Constitution. But the fact of the matter is that everything that he did, he obeyed the court order to have a rerun election. And I think that was good for Kenya. Now,
a rerun election without any reforms.
Now, the problem happened when there was a failure to agree on a reform process and the boycott of the election. In my view, that was the beginning of the problem. There was room for compromise to have a properly constituted IEBC. It's common knowledge that the IEBC had issues, both technical and political, that needed to be solved. Right, the election was not just about technical malfunction or, lack of cell phone coverage. There were also political problems that needed to be resolved. Now, the executive, Kenyatta, should have sat with Odinga and resolved those problems, have a proper rerun, even if it meant postponing the election, right? And then having an election that all Kenyans would see as legitimate. Now, it is true that because of the boycott, there's a legitimacy deficit right now that Kenyatta has, and that might explain some of his reactions to the mock swearing-in of Odinga as the people's president.
Talking about the mock swearing-in of Odinga, and we are talking about Uhuru Park, you saw those hundreds of thousands. In fact, some are actually suggesting that's more than a million that could probably have been present. And some observers have actually suggested that the number was probably 10 times more than the number that graced the inauguration of the legal president, Uhuru Kenyatta, at Kasarani Stadium. How do you react to that?
Yeah, so, obviously, there's the need to, in Kiswahili, we say kupimana nguvu.
Meaning?
Gauging each other's strength.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Odinga, by facilitating the massive turnout at Uhuru Park, this was intended to be a show of strength. Initially there was talk of having him sworn in Mombasa or some other county. But I think the decision to do it in Uhuru Park was calculated to show strength in the capital of the city, of the country.
Now, Kenneth, you are a lawyer. Could you help us put some of these things in context? You have an incredible historical ruling by the Kenyan Supreme Court, September 1st, annulling the election, something that has only been done by three other countries, in fact, globally. Mm-hmm. And then you have 60 days in which to conduct what they call a flesh election. But the Supreme Court does not, in fact, require, for example, that certain specific individuals who may have messed up the first election recuse themselves. No specific reforms. You still continue with the same people. You know, of course, what Albert Einstein had said about this kind of thing. He said, if you continue doing the same thing over and over again,
right,
expecting different results, you're talking about insanity here.
Right. I think that there are two processes here that we should be a bit careful with. The one process has to do with the electoral law, interpretation of the outcome of the first election, the nullity of the process, to say there were irregularities. The other is the broader legal reform issue of the whole electoral system. And I think we shouldn't take these as inseparable elements.
Mm-hmm.
One can come up after the other. If you look at, for example, let me use an analogy from the financial sector. Whether you build capital markets or you start with the banking sector, it depends on the nature of the crisis.
Mm.
But I think what is very telling for the Kenyan experience is that it took a while for Mr. Odinga to actually come around and say, I'm going to challenge this. Initially, he had an opportunity. He could have stood. He opted not to. Okay, citing the fact that even if he stood, he was going to lose. So he chose not to. So that was a wasted opportunity.
Now, what do you mean he chose not to? No, he actually did.
No, the rerun. He boycotted the rerun.
Yeah, but why would he, as he argued, why would he in fact participate in the fresh election when there had not in fact been any reforms made and is going to be conducted by the same people?
Good argument. But if you look at it from the other angle, what does he stand to gain from the stand that he has taken? Absolutely nothing. The only thing that he's going to gain out of this, and I'll be very clear here, is the issue of testing the political legitimacy of the ruling regime.
Mm.
And the legitimacy of a government generally stands on two fundamental issues. One, use of force. Or two, use of ideology. So it's clear that the current Kenyatta government, their legitimacy is not really sound. You can see by the numbers that are going towards the opposition who attended the mock inauguration. So that's the good plus that Mr. Odinga can get. Other than that, I don't see much merit going there.
Let's talk about the Supreme Court's independence. Yes, it demonstrated its independence on September 1st.
Right.
But what happened on October 25, yeah, when it could not raise a column?
Yeah. Good question. We can't really go into details of that, not knowing exactly much of the evidence that was before the Supreme Court. Even as recent as today, now we can comment, but, you know, Kenya has a concept of sub judice. Although some Kenyan lawyers have said, you know, there's freedom of expression, we shouldn't take this as a rigid concept. But
sub judice, what does that mean to a lay person?
When a matter
like
is
me?
Before a court of law, under the in most common law systems, with the exception of countries like the US, you're not allowed to comment on that. But Mr. Miguna has now left Kenya. So, you know, it opens the whole thing to discussion. But there's also another school of thought which says under the Constitution, you've got the freedom of expression, so you can still talk about these things as long as it's not done in such a way that you're trying to influence an outcome of a decision. But I think the Kenyan Supreme Court handled the matter competently. I wouldn't second-guess them. They did a good job. I've met some of the judges.
But they couldn't raise a column on the second time.
Yeah,
and you know what happened to the driver of the Deputy Chief Justice?
Right.
The man was actually shot in Hurlingham.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the Deputy Chief Justice says she was actually, in a sense, she was not allowed to leave her house. She was, in fact, not even allowed to make a telephone call.
Yeah, these are all valid arguments, but like I said, Shaka, most of these cases, it's a question of evidence, circumstantial evidence, and it's hard to make, to substantiate allegations maybe through the media.
Even by a Deputy Chief Justice?
Again, you know,
but there was no quorum.
Yeah, it's subject to scrutiny.
There were only two judges that appeared out of the six.
How else, for example, would, if you look at the way the court was constituted, how else would the court rule, you know, given that there was already, you know, a second opportunity for Mr. Odinga to stand and he chose not to.
No. But look here.
Yeah.
The time when the court could not raise a column.
Right.
They were actually supposed to be sitting and look at the possibility, perhaps, of postponing the fresh election.
Right.
But they couldn't raise a column.
Yeah.
Could it be, perhaps, as the opposition suggests, that in fact the Supreme Court was intimidated by the executive? And you are looking at some of these court orders, for example, which have actually been disregarded completely.
A lot of court orders. Yes, a lot of court orders.
How do you respond to that?
You're absolutely right. A lot of court orders have been ignored, for example, to release certain people who've been arrested.
And the shutting down of the media.
Flagrantly, there's no doubt about that. Where you have that type of thing, what we call contempt, basically it's contempt of court.
Correct.
When there's a court order and you decide, it runs against the rule of law.
So what do you do as a judge in that particular case?
It's a very complex situation. It actually spills beyond the law. It's more of a political situation.
And you have to cooperate with the executive because the people who are enforcing it, in fact, are under the executive.
And where the judiciary is operating in an environment which is politically intimidating, you know, you may not get a favorable outcome. But again, I don't want to say much because, you know, we are not on the ground. There are certain nuances where you really have to gather enough evidence to,
Well, welcome back, of course. And this is, of course, Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders. They are today's leaders. and this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Shaka. We've received excellent social media feedback this week. As always, political tension simmering in Kenya as opposition leader Raila Odinga takes a symbolic presidential oath of office as the people's president. That's despite warnings from the nation's attorney general, who called Odinga's mock swearing-in an act of treason. And this leads us to our question of the week, which asked, how do you feel about Raila Odinga's symbolic presidential oath of office and actions that appear to undermine Kenya's constitution? So let's start with a tweet from Onan Philip, who tweets, it's a way to ensure his presence on the political arena. Also, a show of strength through numbers poses a serious question as to whether the incumbent presidency is a true reflection of the will of the people. It feels like he, Odinga, is baiting or preempting a reckless response from government. We also have another tweet here from Isaac Baha from Tanzania. He tweets, it was the epitome of uselessness in African politics and politicians. Sad these selfish, power-hungry, clueless leaders can still mock thousands. Kenyans, as well as all Africans, have to wake up to political comedians such as Raila Odinga's jokes. And now to our social media comment of the week. That's from Facebook fan Ambrose Atwine from Uganda. And he writes, many African countries and their presidents don't know the meaning of democracy. It was defined by former U.S. President Abraham Lincoln. It should be government of the people, by the people, and for the people. But instead, across Africa, it is the government of the dictators, by the dictators, and for the dictators. Let's go now to another comment from a Facebook fan, Nabikamba Jeffrey. He's from Uganda, and he writes, Raila Odinga's actions are not evil at all. In simple terms, sovereignty lies in the hands of the people of Kenya. Blaming Odinga is imprudent, in my view. And our last Facebook comment comes from Walimu Kimati. He's from Kenya, who writes, the Jubilee administration is the source of all the evil that is happening in Kenya. The current plastic president, Uhuru Kenyatta, knows the majority of Kenyans don't recognize him and his team. Kenyans will go against the Jubilee administration for what the government is doing to real patriots. President Raila Odinga is fighting for equality and a good Kenya. A reminder, of course, that we do appreciate all of your feedback. If you are a new fan, do drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. To comment on our Facebook page, just enter these keywords, Straight Talk Africa, and be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. To join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV 2 Africa, and you can follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa also streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. And to watch us live on your mobile device, download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we bring you Bobby Wine. He's a Ugandan member of parliament, a musician, and an activist. He'll join our discussion on the role of artists in African politics. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
I'm going to tune in just for the music. Well, that's today's special social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests, of course, have a lot of social media comments to discuss. I'm going to hand it back to you.
Thank you very much, of course, for sharing some social media reaction with us. Well, of course, we are right here. And, of course, my guests, I have to say again that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa. It's good to see you again, Anita.
Always, Shaka.
And definitely great to see you, Ken, for the first time on Straight Talk Africa. You're most welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And the resident, of course, legal expert. Tell us, what are the consequences, for example, of not complying with court orders anywhere?
Thank you, Shaka, for that. First of all, it depends. Different jurisdictions have a different approach. In some jurisdictions, you cannot bring an action against the state when the state ignores or violates a court order.
Really?
Yeah. In some countries, yes. You know, that's the position. You can't. Why? You can't bring an action.
Would those countries be democratic?
It's part of the rule of law. It's expect, for example, you can't drag a president to court for, you know, whilst he's in office, for acts done whilst he's in office, especially criminal matters.
But what about the Inspector General of Police, for example?
Oh, you can definitely bring an action against those. But, you know, for things like, contempt of court proceedings against the state in other jurisdictions, that doesn't really fly. Now, if you look at what has happened in Kenya under Article 1401 of the Kenyan Constitution 2010, the swearing-in procedure has to be done before the Chief Justice, or in the absence of the Chief Justice, the Deputy Chief Justice. In addition, Parliament, the legislature, is empowered to enact a law to facilitate the process of swearing-in. Okay, so those are some of the conditions under Article 141. They were not met. The Chief Justice was not there.
Are you talking about
Raila? Yes, Odinga's mock there.
That, obviously, come on, yeah. Let's face it. That was, of course.
I'm trying to establish how the state, how the government can actually build up a case.
Right.
The government is likely to rely on those violations of the Constitution to say, therefore, even if this was a mock thing you were doing, it's amounting to treason.
Correct.
But I think Mr. Odinga.
But what about the wording, though? Because it seems to me that what we actually had him read.
I saw the text.
Very, very carefully.
I saw the text purporting that he was swearing, he was being sworn in as president of the people, not the republic.
Exactly.
The republic is a state. There's only one constitution in Kenya, one constitution. Mm-hmm. Under what law are you being sworn in if it's not that constitution?
Have you known any other situation where you have had two presidents in a republic on the African continent, perhaps with the exception of the Ivory Coast, very, very...
under Mr. Babo, yes.
Under Mr. Rora Babo and Alassane Ouattara.
Yeah, we had a little bit of that. I think if you look back, Angola, before the Savimbi times. But, you know, again, it comes now to international, the concept of recognition of states and governments. You can have a situation where, for example, part of the international community recognizes an opposition figure who claims to be a head of state.
Well, Madagascar for that, Ravaramanana and Rajolino.
But looking at Kenya in particular, I can safely say the government currently of Mr. Kenyatta is in effective control of all states, all arms and instruments of the state.
Mm.
And that's very critical.
There's no question that it is ineffective control. But yeah. Why does it appear that seem to be, in fact, overreacting unnecessarily?
I think it's the issue of legitimacy that Mr. Odinga is successful. I give him 100% score on that. He has raised questions about Kenyatta's legitimacy. There's no doubt. And I think that's why they're uncomfortable. Any regime, if you've won an election, people begin to cite how many people attended your inauguration. Countrywide, we won't cite examples. People are very defensive about it, even if there were no numbers. Immediately begin to cite, it's just that you never took nice pictures. There were lots of people.
You know, this issue of legitimacy in Kenya doesn't really begin today.
Right.
You go back to the 1960s.
Right.
You're talking about Raila Odinga's father, Jaramogi Oginga Odinga,
right.
A man who wrote the classic Not Yet Uhuru. New Yet Independence.
I have a copy of that.
You have a copy of that?
Yes, I have.
And of course, he was the founding vice president. He was essentially challenging, frankly, the legitimacy of guess who? Jomo Kenyatta, the father of Uhuru Kenyatta. Very interesting. What about you, Ken?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main question here is the legitimacy gap and how Kenyatta reacts to it. And just a quick note on the legal aspect of the swearing in. As you said, you know, Odinga was very careful in the wording, right? So this was, from where I see it as much of a political play as opposed to a legal play against Kenyatta. And in fact, the former Chief Justice wrote a tweet suggesting that...
William Mutunga?
Yes. Mm. You know, he joked about his new office of former Chief Justice and asked the Interior Minister not to ban his new office, suggesting that, you know, anyone in Kenya can make up an office and swear themselves into the office. Mm-hmm. That should not be seen as treasonous unless there's something else involved, right? So, you know, again, there are lots of Kenyans who saw this as an overreaction by the state. You know, there's a world in which Kenyatta saw this happening, laughed it off like most people did, but then, you know, did his best to deal with the legitimacy gap that he faces.
But Ken, what is really the fundamental root cause of why we are here? And if, in fact, we could identify it, couldn't we then figure out the way forward for Kenya?
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is electoral malpractice, right?
So there's a need, as the opposition suggests, a need for electoral justice?
Yes. So, you know, I think that the problem Kenya has is that, you know, incumbents never want to lose elections, right? And the circumstantial evidence surrounding the first election in August of last year seems to suggest that there were shenanigans. Someone put their thumb on the till. You know, the IEBC was not forthcoming when the Supreme Court asked them to provide evidence of how they arrived at the outcome of the election. And, you know, ahead of the election itself, polls suggested that Kenyatta would probably win the election. But it was going to be a tight election.
Mm.
Kenya will only move forward when we get to a point where even when elections are tight, incumbents and, you know, non-incumbents alike allow the electoral process to play out openly in a manner that, you know, brings everyone on board and earns legitimacy in the eyes of all Kenyans, winners or losers.
But Ken, we have empirical evidence here. In fact, incontrovertible evidence via a Dr. Rosemary Akombe, who is a former commissioner on the IEBC, who, as we talk, is in New Jersey. She actually headed for the nearest political tall grass because she suggested that the IEBC was not an independent body that could, in fact, carry out an election that was mandated by the Supreme Court. She said 4 out of the 6, I think, commissioners were, in fact, subordinate to the executive.
Yes, so, you know, that is true, and so the problem here is that, you know, if you go back to 2015, 2016, when Odinga was pushing for electoral reform, and you remember the old IEBC got kicked out.
Right.
Then they came up with the idea that instead of having independent commissioners, political parties should appoint commissioners. Right. So,
but the secretariat in this particular
the secretariat was
under Ezra Chiroba.
Yes, the secretariat had issues. Now, you know, I think one of the challenges Kenya faces is the fact that each time there's a problem, instead of building on the old institutions, the Kenyan political elites typically run to start from scratch. Right. So there's no learning, and institutional learning as we go along. So instead of disbanding the old commission, perhaps they could have had a balance. Yes, you appoint representative onto the commission, but also try and make sure that the secretariat is independent of either side. Now, I think the opposition thought that merely by having commissioners in the IEBC, they would be able to influence the secretariat. That did not happen. The secretariat tried to be independent, but I think eventually got captured by the incumbent party.
Anita, what about you? I think that Ken makes a lot of very important points here. Mm-hmm. But what about the fact that you had the problem in 2008? A 2007 election, most people agree, was actually stolen by Emilio Mwai Kibaki. That, in fact, that election was won by Raila Odinga. How come there were no major reforms that were required by the, the Kofi Annan group? How come things didn't change at all?
Let's look at it this way. At the end of the day, who is to benefit depends on who is running. So at the end of the day, if you want reforms, that means you want reforms secured to maybe your position
Anita,
or the
power
other.
Power belongs to the people, not
power
to individuals.
And exactly, and you made the right point. It belongs to the people.
And who
allow
are those people?
The people are the people of Kenya. When they go into the ballot box, let them choose their candidate. But it should not be with their understanding that only I can win.
But how come when those people, in fact, go to vote, and they spend an entire day, frankly,
absolutely,
in lines.
Yes.
At the end of the day, the results do not necessarily reflect the will of the people. They instead reflect the will of who counted the vote or who, in fact, announces the results.
I would disagree with you on
that's
that
what
point.
Has happened in Kenya.
No, but I'll disagree with you on that point. What if, and I'm saying it if, the August elections was actually a true representation of what is actually going on in Kenya? What if that actually did happen?
But it didn't happen.
No, according to maybe your understanding of what happened.
Court.
No, but the Supreme Court then nullified the actual result and told them, okay, if this is the case, let's go back and do it. Let's go back and redo it. So you can't come back and then start claiming I'm going to basically depend on the results of August 8th when it is actually nullified.
Anita, wait a minute. Among other things, the Supreme Court ordered the IEBC to open the server. Up to today as we talk, there is no evidence that the server of August 8th has actually been accessed.
Well, it has been accessed because you found Orengo just the other day at the Intercontinental Hotel.
Yeah, but this is by the opposition.
But the opposition.
It has not, so the IEBC did not, in fact, allow anybody to access that server.
But
why?
They had information that they got the data themselves from places we don't even know. But they were able to say that this is the result based on what they were able to see. But they will not say, Orengo said that at the Intercontinental Hotel.
That is them, of course. I don't know. I have not seen the detailed evidence of that.
But that is what we're also waiting to find out.
They may have gotten it through some kind of whistleblower. But let's face it. Let's go again to the IEBC.
Yes.
How come, after today, the IEBC has not helped people access to that server? Is it perhaps because the person in fact who may have won that election may not in fact be Uhuru Kenyatta? Because if in fact he had won in the election, I don't see any reason why that server would not have been opened.
Well, that's why we had another election on October 26th to ensure that these results are what we thought that they were. This is why we had that re-election or rerun of the presidential elections, to ensure that the integrity of the IEBC is upheld. We may not always agree with every single...
Does the IEBC, in your view, really have integrity?
The integrity is in the systems themselves. It's the people, maybe, who go about implementing some of these things that may be questioned. But we cannot constantly be questioning every single system that we have in place. We don't trust the judiciary. We don't trust the IEBC. We don't basically trust the system as we have it. Mm. When do we come to a point where we also need to acknowledge the fact that we ourselves as citizens, we are responsible to ensure that these instruments of government actually work?
Shaka.
Yes, please.
Just to sort of add on the point that Anita is making, if I were, for example, in a hypothetical situation, if I were advisor to Mr. Odinga, I would have advised him against doing what he did, and I'll tell you why.
But when you haven't answered my question about the server.
No, no, that's a different
Could you
one.
Please answer this question before you rush to Odinga. No, sincerely.
Yeah. Right.
Because unless we answer that question,
right?
Yeah.
Frankly,
right.
We are just wasting time.
I can go. I don't know why they don't want to answer the question, but yeah, let me try.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that so I looked at the numbers, mm-hmm. and numbers leading up to the polls, numbers up to election day, turnout numbers, results from non-presidential elections in Kenya. Everything that, you know, my numbers could be wrong, let me put that out there, but everything suggests that Kenyatta probably could have won that election,
mm-hmm.
with a very close margin, mm-hmm. of 51% or less.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He was definitely ahead of Odinga.
And Odinga, of course, claims that he, on the contrary, he actually won.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, but tell me, if your numbers, what they say, if in fact your numbers are accurate, then can you explain any particular reason why Mr. Chebukati
refused to open the server?
Precisely.
Yes. So this is my hypothesis, given what has happened. I think that either the election was going to go to a runoff, and Kenyatta did not want that, or it was going to be a very close, 50-plus, a few thousand votes, like happened in 2013.
When you say, and Kenyatta didn't want that, who is Kenyatta? We're talking about Kenya, which is run by a constitution,
so
nobody is above the law?
Yes, nobody is supposed to be above the law.
At least in the theory.
Yes, nobody is supposed to be above the law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my thinking is that someone padded the numbers to have a clear victory in the first round. Now, we don't know who that might be. Could have been, it could have been an order from above, or it could have been an overzealous lieutenant. But the actions of the IEBC, as you seem to be suggesting, point to an institution that has something to hide. Otherwise, they would have let the servers open for everyone to see. So any reasonable people would conclude that the IEBC has something to hide.
Right.
The question is what? And we can only speculate what that is.
So what would you say, frankly, is the way forward?
I mean, I agree with Kenneth here that, it's time for the two big men of Kenyan politics
to come together and...
Yes, to, cool down and get together and figure out the way forward. Because the fact of the matter is that half of Kenya is very loyal to Odinga, and another half is very loyal to Kenyatta. And Kenya can't keep going through these cycles because of these two men and their families. It's high time they came together and figured out the way forward, right? Both sides have legitimate issues that they can bring to the table and iron out for the sake of the country.
So you, of course, you happen to be a political scientist. You agree that what is needed in Kenya right now is not really a legal solution, but rather a political solution.
Yes, because the legal route is bound to fail, right? So right now the president is and the executive are disobeying court orders, right? There's nothing stopping the opposition from also disobeying court orders, right? Notice that in all the charge sheets of people present at the swearing-in, there's mention of treason. But the only person who committed the supposed crime of treason is Odinga. Why hasn't Odinga been arrested yet? He hasn't been arrested because arresting Odinga would set Kenya on fire, right?
Why would it set Kenya on fire?
His supporters would probably stop that from happening, right? So the only way out, arresting Odinga is not a viable option. And prosecuting him. I think Kenya is beyond that point where you could detain an opposition leader and get away with it. So the only way forward is to figure out a political solution that could satisfy the Odinga side. That might include several reforms, maybe a deepening of devolution, in order for the country to move forward. But the chest thumping, use of force, I don't think it will get Kenya anywhere.
Very interesting. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Hello, good afternoon, Tedla from New York.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Shaka. It's a very, very, very interesting discussion. But for me, somebody said it in the last minute. This has become now a personal battle. You told us about historically Kenyatta and the other gentleman's fathers, they were seen like political enemies. Now, this goes too far, and we see in the 2008 a huge bloodshed just on tribal line. My worry for Kenya is they should not put this conflict as a tribal conflict and start a dirty war. We don't need that. These two gentlemen, they should come and sit down together. They have personal problems. This has nothing to do with Kenya. They should solve it somehow, amicably, for the better of their country and the people, please.
Thank you very much. We should point out, by the way, that the two gentlemen, Jaramogi Oginga Odinga and Jomo Kenyatta, were not initially really enemies. They were, in fact, allies. As a matter of fact, the British wanted Mr. Odinga to become the first prime minister, and he said, no, I defer to our leader who is in Kapenguria. And that was Jomo Kenyatta. The rest, of course, is history. Let's go to Clement from the Republic of Kenya. Good evening, Clement. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, thank you. And I'm actually listening to the discussion.
From where?
From Nairobi.
Aha. Uh-huh. Go ahead. What is your question or comment, please?
My comment was based on this server opening. Because looking at the nullification, one of the major points that made the IBC nullify the election was the failure to open the servers. So meaning the exercise of the 8th of August was entirely nullified and should not be referred to. So the basis of Raila and the team to swear him based on the 8th August result is not valid. However, he has a good following. The only thing that is required here is first to initiate dialogue other than do some mockery like the one we saw, the drama we saw on the 30th, because that is actually trying to lower his dignity as a strong leader. You can't do such a show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Clement. Thank you very much. But of course, we remember that the Odinga people, in fact, wanted a dialogue with Jubilee people, and the president said that it was only going to talk about development. Correct?
Okay.
You have the last one?
Yes. Shaq, I was going to say, the point I wanted to make is that in law, generally, when judges are sitting, they don't just read what's written on the law. There are various sources of the law, doctrines of equity. Equity aids the vigilant. Odinga was not vigilant enough. There's also a concept in international law of acquiescence. He acquiesced in the results of the election and reacted too late. It's over.
Yeah, but we were talking about dialogue here. We're talking about political solutions here.
The reason I'm giving this...
At least in the interest, frankly, of the unity of the Republic.
Yeah, dialogue is a post-conflict scenario. But the current scenario in which we are, he acquiesced in the results of the elections. It's too late. He lost his right.
But doesn't the president honestly have to come on the table? Does he really think it is optional?
Oh, in the post-conflict scenario, now they can dialogue. But, you know, we're looking at the action he took. It was inappropriate and unacceptable.
Okay. Okay, my good lawyer. Well, on that note, thanks to my three distinguished guests, Anita Regan, Dr. Ken Opalo, and Dr. Kenneth Mwenda, thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Kenya. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.